I'm on Sirius XM Channel 141. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Harold Fisher, and we're talking about the other races and issues that you'll see at the voting booth this year. My guests are April Ryan, White House correspondent for American Urban Radio Networks, Jesse Holland, author and political reporter for the Associated Press, and James Wright, political reporter for the Afro-American Newspapers. Lines are open. Let's go to the lines at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Sean. Sean, calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Hi, this is a great topic of discussion.
And well, thank you.
I said it is because, you know, several years ago, if you would listen to Tavis Smiley and Cornel West, they were accusing the president of not doing much for the black community. But I'll trump that by saying that if
no pun intended, right?
The of D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, would simply go to their local representatives to make things happen. And then, you know, things that are in the community would start, you know, would start to take change. But the president just can't come into your community and make these, you know, humongous changes when your local authorities should be taking care of these things.
Yeah, well said, Sean. Thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Roy, calling from Fort Washington. Roy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. How you doing?
Doing fine.
I actually just voted tonight, but your guest mentioned an item on the ballot that I had a question about. I had asked the people ahead of time if I had any questions, can I come back?
Sure.
And that point was about the at-large county council seats in Prince George's County. And it was, and the question I had, though, it wasn't about that. It was about the two terms. I didn't know the term. I didn't know if it was 2 years or 4 years, and that determined which way I was going to vote. And nobody knew that answer. I didn't know. I never really knew the terms of a county council.
Yeah, so go ahead, James. Give me the rundown on that.
Sure. It's two 4-year terms for county council members, and it's also 2 4-year terms for county executive.
Right.
Okay, you're saying it's 2 4-year terms?
Yes.
See, I didn't know that, and if I knew that, that would have determined my the way I voted. And
why?
Which, you know what they told me at the poll? They said 2 years, and I felt that was bogus.
Hmm.
So I just went with my feeling that it was 4 years.
But Roy, let me ask you, why would that make a difference in how you voted? What's the concern?
Because I think a politician could accomplish a lot in 8 years, but if the two terms would have been 2 years, I don't think they can get much done in 4 years.
Oh, I see. Okay, and of course, and thank you so much, Roy. And of course, if you are, as was suggested, if a Karen Tolles or someone else mm-hmm. who is already on the council mm-hmm. whose term would be ending, if they were to run again, then that would mean in one of those at-large positions
right.
that they could get at least another 4 years.
That's correct.
If they win. So, you know, certainly something to think about. I want to talk about, you know, one of the other issues that we haven't really discussed a whole lot. The man who would be governor, who was not, Anthony Brown, who lost the 2014 race for governor, who was lieutenant governor for the state of Maryland, is running for Congress. And it looks like he's got a pretty good shot.
Well, it's one of those interesting things that we're looking at it like a political resurrection, because there were plenty of people who thought Anthony Brown should be governor right now, that he should have beat Larry Hogan. Mm-hmm. Larry Hogan won the election. He's now governor. Now, this is a real test for Anthony Brown. If he can't win this congressional seat, what can he win in Maryland?
Mm-hmm.
So if he, it does look like everything I've seen has said that he should win this congressional seat. But his race shouldn't even be close. If he can't do well running in this congressional seat, there's going to be real doubt about his political future as an elected official in Maryland.
Go right ahead, April. I was about to ask you. Go ahead.
Anthony Brown definitely has to pull in the black vote. And when he was running for governor, I know for a fact many African-Americans in the Baltimore area were not necessarily pleased with Anthony Brown. So he did not really, I don't know, he didn't, he courted the African-American vote, but it just was not there for him. And maybe this go-round we'll see what happens when it comes to the area where he's running. But for statewide, he just didn't grab it here. So maybe he has to go regionally in the state to be a federal lawmaker, because versus being, you know, all of the state, because he just was not grabbing the African-American vote in certain portions of the state.
And I think one of the interesting things about this, let us say for the sake of argument, that he does win. The man that he ran against for governor is in the state house. So I'm sure that would make for a very interesting relationship.
Most definitely.
When the governor needs to go to the, you know, federal lawmakers in Maryland to ask for certain things.
That's right.
Quite humbling, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It would be very humbling. And it's also interesting because Larry Hogan, I don't want to get too much off into this, but he's very popular right
he's
now.
He's extremely popular.
And
Maryland.
So then and you talk about the Anthony Brown race. The Cook Political Report has rated that as pretty safe Democratic. So he's going to get in. My biggest concern, and it's really not a concern, but I say it's a concern, is that when he does, when he wins, he's going to be a freshman Democrat, more than likely in a Republican House, but that's another issue. But that's my concern about that.
Can you say that? Do we know that? Considering, you know, in April, I know you're on, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue a lot, but I'm sure you hear, you know, a lot of rumblings about, you know, what could happen in the House and the Senate, you know, as it relates to whether or not the Senate could switch, you know.
Right now, I'm basing everything pre-Comey letter. Pre-Comey letter, and I hate to say it, but Jeff, you know this. That letter has caused ripples throughout Washington and throughout the nation. And pre-Comey letter, there was a really strong feeling, and the Republicans were very fearful of the fact that the Senate could go democratically. They felt that they could keep the House. But now with the twists and turns just days away, we have to see. I mean, you know, Hillary Clinton is still really strong in some states right now, Florida and Pennsylvania, key states that she needs. But, but at the same time, will Senate races reflect her strength in certain parts of the country? I mean, right now, Donald Trump is supposedly beating her in Ohio. A battleground. So we have to see how this all plays out. This is something we've never seen before, and we just have to wait and see.
Well, and here's something we have to also keep in mind when we're talking about especially all these races, is that a significant part of the country voted early or
yes.
voted absentee. And I think our figures show just about 20%, about 1 in 5 people have already voted like April said, pre-Comey letter.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
for those votes, this is why we've seen all those crazy stories about people trying to go, can people go back and change their votes, mm-hmm. which people are not going to do. Yeah,
Donald Trump is bringing it up.
And the lion's share of those voters, according to reports, are Democrats.
Well, nobody's going back to stand in line twice to vote,
right.
to change their votes. But if they want to, I think there's only 4 states in which it's even possible. But yeah. my point in all of this is that for a lot of people, their mind has already been made up.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking at now is just the people who are left.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Vaughn. Calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Vaughn. What's on your mind?
Well, what's really on my mind is that the one thing I feel like we haven't done is we haven't made these officials be held accountable for the younger generation. I hear them speak a lot and specifically what they're going to do for the older generation, and that's appealing, of course. I think that's what usually gives them leverage as far as getting votes, but I don't hear anyone speaking specifically on how they're going to influence children, how we need to start investing, teaching economics in predominantly urban communities, to start teaching us how to not only acquire but sustain wealth. And I think that will give us a lot more leverage with these officials and making sure that they keep their promises. I think Obama did some really great things, but he also promised a lot that he just was not able to get done, and we gave him the opportunity to sit. And, of course, it's not all him. He had a Republican Congress that was really against a lot of his political agenda. But at the same time, we weren't holding him accountable for the things that we knew he could get done. So we need to start investing in the younger generation so that we create a body of educated voters. And then we won't go through these problems like having a reality TV star as president.
Well, this is just about my, and I'm going to date myself, but this is about my 20th year covering politics in some shape, form, or fashion. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, the people that the politicians pay attention to are the people who vote. And it's only recently in the Obama era that the younger people voted. Mm-hmm. This is why they've got a lot more in the last 8 years than they did before that. So if you want politicians to pay attention to your issues, you have to prove to them that you'll either go to the polls and vote for them or go to the polls and vote against them. If you want to track the issues that politicians pay attention to, track the people who showed up to vote for them or the people who showed up to vote against them. Those are the people and the issues that they care about. You want your issues in front of a politician, prove to them that you're going to either vote them in or vote them out.
Because prior to that, it was always seniors in the middle class.
That's right.
Well, yeah, seniors in the middle class, because that's who voted.
That's who voted. So something, and now you hear about, you know, dog whistle suburban mom, comments. You hear about black women voters, April, you know, so
because that's who votes.
Everybody wants April's vote. Yep. Vote. Nobody cares about mine. But,
we come in numbers. We are the biggest ones, the biggest group that vote.
That's right.
That's 100% correct.
That's right. Because you want to vote for snow removal. I'm the one who shovels it.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Mom, I shovel too, okay?
So I have no doubt. And look, for those, I think I would be remiss, while we still have April on, to also mention this. And by the way, thank you, Vaughn, for sharing with us. You know, there's about to be a changing of the guard in Baltimore City. Stephanie Rawlings Blake, she decided not to run for re-election. And so there is going to be a new mayor in Baltimore. A lot of people, you know, say that, Catherine Pugh, state senator. So, you know, something to keep in mind, because you know what they say, for statewide races, as Baltimore goes, or as Baltimore and Prince George's County goes, so goes the state. And uh-huh. So certainly those are the two big jurisdictions/municipalities that people need to keep an eye on beyond November 8th. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Keith. Hey, there you go, Keith. You're in Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have to disagree with you, Harold. Baltimore has had some trouble leadership.
Well, I just said new. I didn't say.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's not new, Earl. It's the same thing, because Catherine Pugh is not going to do nothing. Baltimore has, the power structure in my city has been under black leadership for over 20 years or more, and Baltimore has gone to the dogs, the lions, the wolves, and everything, which is evident from the social upheaval that we won too long ago had. And Baltimore has not had any good leadership since William Donald Schaefer. I'm disappointed.
Well, let me, as a product of Baltimore, as a product of Baltimore, I hear you. But let me ask you this. Do you remember, and I don't want to disparage William Donald Schaefer or any politician in Baltimore, but I think a lot of the problem in Baltimore, and tell me if you agree with me or not, a lot of the problem in Baltimore was globalization. When Bethlehem Steel left, you had a lot of people in Baltimore who were able to get jobs, who didn't have college degrees, great middle-income jobs, getting homes, nice cars, and were able to live a middle-class dream. Once manufacturing left, so goes the jobs, and then that's when the blight came. And then also, when you talk about William Donald Schaefer took those dollar homes, took those homes around the Inner Harbor when it was all rash fields, and took those homes from the black people who lived there, sold those homes for a dollar. And a lot of those black people were not able to go back into those homes. Those homes were built up to be beautiful. That whole Inner Harbor area is beautiful. Unfortunately, the African-American people who were living in those homes were displaced. So if we're going to paint the picture, let's paint it right. And then also, Kurt Schmoke, along with the Rouse Company, put $130 million into Sandtown, Winchester, the area where Freddie Gray was taken into custody wrongfully. And then when Martin O'Malley came in, he did not do anything with it. So let's look at it in its totality and not just say black leadership. There's been a problem in Baltimore for years.
Yeah. Well, look, April, I think that's a good place for us to say goodbye to you, because I know you've got your TV appearance. But April, look, thank you so much for sharing with us. Love you dearly, sis. Go Bears, Morgan State.
Yes, Morgan State, but we're on Howard.
That's
on
all right.
Howard.
Hey,
Bison as well.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. Yeah, go HBCUs. April, yes, we'll talk to you soon.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening in the district and also in Virginia. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're also going to talk to Janine, calling for Upper Marlboro. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the down ballot issues as we get closer to Election Day. I want to go back to the phone lines. Janine, thanks for being patient. Calling from Upper Marlboro, what's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I had a question about the your panel people said something about at-large members. Can anybody run for those spots even if they haven't already been on the council board or, you know, seat already?
Yes, they can. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine, Belinda Queen Howard, who's very active in Central Prince George's County with police and political activism, she told me that if this comes through, she's very seriously looking at running for one of those spots.
And I think the point, Janine, is that these are, you know, if voters approve, these are new positions. They are positions that did not previously exist, which is why term limits apply to the position that an elected official currently holds.
Okay.
So that if you're on the county council and you decide to run, that doesn't mean that if your term limit is over that you can't run for county executive.
Correct.
I thought
because that was a different position.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the same, but okay.
It's a new seat, though.
Well, I mean, the question basically people have to ask themselves, do you want a larger county council or do you like it as is? That's the question.
Yeah, because what we've been talking about is the scuttlebutt.
Right.
But like you said, the reality is larger or smaller. I mean,
right.
That really
larger
is,
or status quo.
Yes, exactly. Larger or status quo.
Does it benefit then? Does it benefit?
Isn't that a question?
That is the question right there. Who benefits with a larger county council?
Exactly.
I can't answer that. I don't know who benefits. I will tell you that it's a question that each voter will have to ask and answer for themselves.
That's right.
Will a larger county council help you as a resident of Prince George's County, or will the current council be the best for you as a resident of Prince George's County? That's a question each voter has to answer for themselves.
That's right. I mean, will it mean that your trash is collected in a more efficient fashion, or does that just mean longer county council meetings? you know, so, and you know, that, you know, that first part may be tongue in cheek, but with two extra council members, yes, there will be longer county council meetings, no doubt. But you know, the question is, will things get done? So certainly, Janine, have you voted already?
No, sir, but I do plan on being there on voting day, of course.
Okay, well, make sure you get up. Thank you so much, Janine. We appreciate your phone call. Let's go over to the Commonwealth real quick. There's a spirited race for the 10th congressional district in Virginia, and it is just, boy, I tell you, it's a slugfest. Lou Ann Bennett, Democrat, and Congresswoman Barbara Comstock. I have seen, just today, I have probably seen advertisements from both of these candidates on TV. I mean, it's almost as if it's the only thing that's there. They're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And it's amazing that the only two campaign commercials that I've seen for this whole election have been for the presidential race and the Barbara Comstock, Lou Ann Bennett race. But if you think about it, Barbara Comstock is the incumbent.
Yes.
Should a would a safe incumbent be spending that much on TV commercials? This makes me wonder how worried they are that what should be a pretty safe Republican seat in Northern Virginia might turn. And that's would be a big surprise, honestly, if you have a safer, you have a Republican seat turn in to Democrats there, and seeing all the money that they're spending on this seat makes me think that someone's worried that Lou Anne Bennett actually has a shot.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that district is that it is constantly growing and changing, and it is becoming browner. And this is why Lou Anne Bennett has a really, really good shot at this. Barbara Comstock, I just don't think, has reached out to those communities that are coming into Loudoun County and coming into that part of Fairfax County. And as a result of that, that's why she's in trouble.
Mm. I do want to, and I've just been reminded, we've got to talk about a little bit about what's happening in Montgomery County. We've got a school board race in Montgomery County, which, you know, again, another down ballot issue. Three seats, an at-large seat, second district, and fourth district race in Montgomery County. And Montgomery County has had, over the past year, a rather difficult issue, or a difficult time with, you know, with its school board. Of course, you know, I believe it was last year, their superintendent, you know, left, and there have been questions, just as we've seen often in Prince George's County, about the child safety, for example, with some, you know, teachers that have been, you know, arrested for inappropriate touching, you know, of children. And while that may not necessarily be obvious when it comes to school board leadership, certainly for those people who may be sitting in those board meetings or even paying attention peripherally, you've got to know who is in charge of the education of your public school system if you have children in them.
Harold, here's the thing about Montgomery County. Last week, a statistic came out that 30% of all children in Montgomery County are Latino.
Exactly.
29% are white and 22% are black. So you're looking at a minority in terms of the school district the population. And this is interesting because the old Montgomery County is almost gone.
Yeah.
And so many of these politicians are going to have to adjust to the new Montgomery County. And can they do that?
And to that point, when you talk about the old Montgomery County school system, the battle was always between Montgomery County and Howard County as far as which had the most desirable school system. And as we have seen, let us say, for the past 10 years in Montgomery County, there's been the discussion about achievement gap between, you know, white students and black and now brown students. So, again, another reason why people need to pay attention. Now, there's a term limit issue also in Montgomery County as well. So, and this is for the Montgomery County Council. And so something else that, you know, voters need to pay attention to, because, you know, the old argument is vote them in or vote them out. But, you know, for some people that are not purists, you know, only a little while.
Well, I've seen term limits wax and wane all over the country for the last 20 years. And the question comes down to, do you want experienced political leadership, or do you need fresh faces? All term limits do is guarantee you have fresh faces. It doesn't guarantee that you get experienced political leadership. So that's the question that you have when you come down to term limits. And it depends on what year it is, whether people think term limits are good or not. But you just have to be careful about voting in someone, you know, that person knows that their job is going to end one day.
Mm-hmm. Two quick issues before we come up. Another race, the U.S. Senate race, Chris Van Hollen. Some would offer that he could be, you know, a shoe-in. He's running against Republican Kathy Schlage, who, and of course, he is, they are vying for the seat that is being vacated by Barbara Mikulski. Big shoes tough act to follow. Is this really a race, or is Van Hollen a shoe-in?
Let me say this. I think that Chris Van Hollen is a shoe-in, but I'm very interested in seeing and looking at the map when it comes out on Wednesday. Here's why. How is Chris Van Hollen going to do in Western Maryland? How is he going to do in the Eastern Shore? How is he going to do in the far northern reaches of Maryland? And this is why this is important. This is important for the gubernatorial candidates in 2018. They need to see where he has his weaknesses so they can focus on that, particularly the Democrats, if they want to regain the state house.
And real quick, D.C., let's not forget about that. We are going to see the return of Vincent Gray. It's very likely, yes. The former mayor. Also, the D.C. council is changing. There was an article out just this week. It is younger, yes. And it is not as black as it used to be.
Now, and this will be one of the first, correct me if I'm wrong, this will be one of the first elections without Marion Barry on the ballot in how many years?
Yeah, indeed. But he's there in spirit.
He's there in spirit. Yeah. But this will be the first time in a number of years that Marion Barry's name will not appear on a D.C. ballot.
And the interesting thing about it is that you're now seeing in Breanne Nadeau, Ward 1, Alyssa Silverman, at-large independent, Charles Allen, Ward 6, Democrat. You're seeing them become more assertive on the council. And this is, they're good people. All of them are good people. I know them. They're good liberal people, but sometimes they're not our kind of liberal. Meaning that they're not insensitive to racial issues. They just don't see it in a different kind.
Could it be a generational issue?
It could be.
Could be. Well, whether it is or not, voters and even non-voters need to pay attention to what is going on. D.C. Council, Prince George's County Council, Montgomery County School Board, Congress, Senate. If you haven't voted, get out and do it. And, of course, we're all looking forward to November 8th. April Ryan, Jesse Holland, and James Wright, thank you all so much for participating. Love this conversation, and we'll see you guys again, I'm sure. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, November 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, on Twitter at H Fisher, WHUR, or Daily Drum, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.